I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round, to be back where the boys all know me, back where the girls...
This is the North Carolina Theater Story Show. I'm your host, Lynn Pryor. James Johnson is our technical director. We're coming to you from a 100-year-old house, the former home of the Gilbert Theater, here in historic Haymont in Fayetteville, North Carolina. This is show number 3. Today's guest is Dr. Evan Bridenstine, Theater Department Chair at Methodist University here in Fayetteville. Welcome, Evan.
Thank you very much.
Wonderful to have you.
Good to be here.
Evan, we were just listening to the theme song by Cole Porter, Longing for Dear Old Broadway, weren't we? Such a catchy tune. It was one of his early songs, way back in the teens, I guess.
Back in Tin Pan Alley.
Tin Pan Alley, okay. Exactly. But Evan, I'm asking you if you could do... Evan, if you could snap your fingers and be on Broadway, doing anything that you wanted, directing a play, starring in a play, having your own play presented, what would you do?
I would get myself into the company of The Iceman Cometh, which is the revival that has Nathan Lane in it. So let's see. Nope, didn't happen. Okay.
So he's playing...
he's playing the lead, yes.
What's his name? I hope that happens. It's one of my favorite plays.
Okay.
So there's your wish for that. Now, notice what you in front of you there. Mm-hmm. You have a red box, and this is something that I do to our guests, rather, and you can pick it up if you want.
Okay.
But Evan, we know that you are a fine actor. You were our first Marley when we started doing Christmas Carol, and you were marvelous as Marley.
Why, thank you.
You direct beautifully. You wonderful professor, I hear. But how are you at improv is the question. So what now? Okay. We're about to find out. So... Evan, what we do is you're going to describe what you took out of the red box, and then you are going to tell a story. It needn't be too long, please.
Okay.
Nor too short. But it should be fascinating.
Okay.
All right. First, you'll describe to our listeners around the world what you have in your hand.
Well, it's a small carved figure. The tag says made in Kenya. So there you go. It is something of a mythical creature here because I'm seeing a sort of a combination. The front part of the creature is shades of gray. Looks a bit like a lion in the front. But then you get about halfway back and it changes color to kind of a red and looks slightly fishtaily to me. But okay, maybe that just isn't me. This... And you're very lucky that you chose this particular object for me, because at the moment I'm reading Small Gods by Terry Pratchett, and a major portion of that book is a journey through the desert, and there is a religious pilgrim acolyte kind of guy, and his name is actually Brother. There's jokes about calling him Brother, but okay. And at one point in the book, he's making his way across the desert, and one of the things that he meets out there is a lion that has been in the desert too long. So technically, this is a lion that has found a hole that's satisfactory for the first part of it, but kind of gets sunburned on the back part. And that makes it very angry and very hungry.
All right.
Did that work?
Good.
Okay.
Very good.
Back in the red box.
All right, back in the red box.
We're returning that DVD.
Okay. Now, Evan... What classes are you teaching right now at the university?
This was the year for, well, every semester, every term, I teach the Survey of Theater class, which is our course that's more inclusive of people who are not theater majors that I do. And then this past year was the year for teaching the theater history and literature cycle. Next year I'll be teaching the acting classes.
I see. So this does lead to a degree there.
Yeah, there's a Bachelor of Arts to be earned. We just graduated a student.
It's a small university, small department.
Yeah, but there have been some times where we haven't had any majors at all. So the idea that we have theater majors right now, which is a happy thought.
Well, okay. Good. So when you are teaching, I've asked you to talk about two things. I'm always limiting us because we only have 30 minutes.
Okay.
Two things that, what are you, the most important things that you would tell an actor?
Well, that acting is not about being some sort of a state of being, like being angry or the one that my students love. I'm not sure why the female students particularly enjoy sarcasm. Mm-hmm. But they do. They love launching the sarcasm bomb, I think because they think mostly men are stupid, which probably is true on some level. But it's not that you are being sarcastic with a line, but that you are being that you're using sarcasm to do something. Anytime somebody speaks on stage, even if it's something as simple as hello, it's with the intention of accomplishing something. In the Survey of Theater class, for example, I give them a six-line scene from Carol Churchill's Mad Forest. It's two characters. I could do the whole scene for you right now. Six lines. Ready? The first line is by a guy named Radu. And his first line is, "How are you?" He speaks this to Florinda. Her response is, "Fine." His next line, really complicated text so far, right? His next line is, "And your family?" Her line after that is, "Fine. And yours?" His next line is, "So when is Lucia's wedding?" Her line, last line of the scene, "You know when it is." Now, that's small talk. All of that is small talk. Doesn't seem to have much depth to it. In the context of the play, there's a reason why they're speaking in small talk. And the scene actually becomes, or can become, a love scene.
I knew that was what
it was heading in that direction. Yeah, and it's one of those things that, when you know certain things about the characters, when you know why they're saying these things and why they're not saying much at all, which is the point of bringing it up in that particular class, that it's not just that this is realistic conversation, because that's not really the goal of the playwright. The playwright is to move the action of the play forward. So something is happening in that scene.
Yes.
And it's a scene about forgiveness. It's a scene about being brave. It is a scene about being in love. It's about lots of different things. And it's those six really shallow depth in terms of content line. You need to know the subtext.
Yes.
And you need to know what they're doing when they say these things.
Yes. So what an exercise that would be if you say these same lines, you're falling in love. These same lines, you're falling out of love.
Yeah.
So
these same lines, you're apologizing. Say these same lines.
Yes.
Tell him everything's forgiven.
So the action is what you really want in those circumstances.
What your character's pursuing. Uh-huh. And that's really what acting is about, what they're trying to do.
Yes. Uh-huh. Excellent. So that's it.
That's okay.
Good. Now we move from that classroom situation to your monologue.
Oh,
last week we had something from
we're kind of continuing the Shakespeare.
And which play are you doing?
I am doing a little bit of Leonardo from Much Ado About Nothing. This is the wedding scene.
So set the scene for us.
This is the fourth act out of five. And at this point in the play, up to this point, it seemed to be for Leonardo and his friends, Don Pedro and Claudio, that this has just been a happy time, a relaxing time, even a party time after a period of civil conflict. Don Pedro's brother, Don John, has, however, manufactured an interruption because Claudio wants to marry Leonardo's daughter, whose name is Hero. I think it's an interesting name to give to a girl, but okay. And Don John has basically set it up to make it look like Hero has been unfaithful to Claudio. Lets Don Pedro and Claudio see that, but they keep it until the day of the wedding. And on the day of the wedding, comes time for the pastor to basically say, "Do you know anything any reason why these two shouldn't be married?" And Claudio says, "Yeah." And basically walks away from the wedding. It's a very cruel thing for him to have done, particularly if he had great depth of feeling, but that's kind of giving him short shrift. But The thing for Leonardo is that this turns, well, the whole play basically turns on a moment when the refusal at the wedding is taking place. And Leonardo, who up to that point has been this jovial guy, kind of a very nice host, just lets loose.
All right. Let's hear it.
Oh, by the way, Hero, hearing all this, has fainted, and she's just now reviving. Okay. Do not live, Hero. Do not open thine eyes. For did I think thou wouldst not quickly die? Thought I thy spirits are stronger than thy shames? Myself would on the rearward of reproaches strike at thy life. Grieved I had but one. Chid I for that at frugal nature's frame? Oh, want too much by thee. Why had I won? Why ever wast thou lovely in my eyes? Why had I not, with charitable hand, took up a beggar's issue at my gates, who smirched thus and mired with infamy? I might have said, no part of it is mine. This shame derives itself from unknown loins, but mine. And mine I loved, and mine I praised, and mine that I was proud on. Mine so much that I myself was to myself not mine, valuing of her. Why, she is fallen into a pit of ink that the wide sea hath drops too few to wash her clean again, and salt too little that may season give to her foul-tainted flesh. Yeah, I know.
Oh, excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a wonderful little moment to just launch into.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you chose that. Now, you've written a play.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the title?
The title is Miller's Point.
And it's going to be presented at the Gilbert Theater.
Late July.
I
knew I should have come with the dates, and I don't have them in my head. I'm sorry. You'll be able to find that through the website. They've got it listed there. Yes.
We'll put it on there.
Yay!
But it's on the main stage.
Yeah, it's there on the stage. It's going to be a really quick and concentrated rehearsal and performance period. It's all July.
I see.
And
what's the plot?
The plot is basically there's a woman, her name is Shelley, and she is coming home from calling hours at the funeral home for a guy named Billy Parks, who she had something of a crush on in high school. And while she's heading home, she decides to stop at a place that I'm not sure my students know what this means. The place for parking? Did that make sense?
I know what that is.
Okay.
You have to be 80 to know it.
Okay, fine. I'm not 80.
Well, I am.
Okay, fine. 50s. Okay. You know what it means, James?
Okay. The place, is that like a makeout point type
thing?
Yep.
That's a sort of a thing.
Okay.
Basically stops by there. You're not sure exactly why she stops there until later on, because a friend of hers tries to get her to leave. Her name's Natalie. She tries to get her to go home. She's somewhat resistant to that. And what happens is that after Natalie finally leaves her alone, the stage direction, it's a wonderful thing for a playwright to say, time bends. You know, because what happens is that Billy Parks and a younger version of Shelley show up, and she's basically seeing this moment in her life, and Billy can see her, but her younger self cannot see her.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, I can't.
So the question is, you know, if you get that, you intervene, do you do something, do you nudge them in a particular direction that they may not have gone before?
I see. Wonderful. Well, it's game time. Now, Evan, we've been doing a series of games about Shakespeare, mm-hmm. and I see that you want to get yourself in the mood. You came in tights and wearing a doublet and a floppy hat with an ostrich feather on it. So you're definitely...
What, this whole thing?
Because, you know, someone years ago said, somehow, sometimes the hood makes the monk. Well, here you are, dressed in this outfit. James, on the other hand, in a tie-dye T-shirt of dubious provenance. James, you know, I know this is radio, but there are certain standards I wish we could adhere to. And please put down that cheeseburger. And I've been criticized for making noise, just as I was earlier this evening by him. And yet his slurping, I think, is the one that caused that soda slurping last week. But enough about that.
When I say the mind goes first.
Well, no, I must say I'm going to be calling your mother. Okay. Why? No. Your mother will shape you up. So there it is. Now I'm going to start. Now, James, last week I asked you to keep score that seemed beyond your capacity. Just go 1, 2, 3, 4 in a slash. Okay. Now I'm going to. Okay.
I know he's really harsh on me.
Well, no. I mean, I'm trying to. I'm doing it for his own good.
You're setting standards.
No, I'm standards, but also his own good.
Okay.
Now what I'm going to do? I'm going to. Give you the name of a famous character, a lead character in a Shakespeare play, and I want you to give me the name of the play. Now, if you are successful, there are 12 questions, and if you're successful, your prize, your gift, is this fabulous book called Theatre of a City, The Places of London Comedy, 1598 to 1642.
Cool.
It's just marvelous. I really am kind of kicking myself for offering this, but I'm going to do it. But you have to do very well on the quiz. Are you
all
ready?
Right. So this is, you're going to tell me the character.
I'm telling you the character, play. And you name the play.
We'll see.
All right. Prospero.
Oh, that's Tempest.
Titania.
Midsummer Night's Dream.
Petruchio.
That's Taming of the Shrew.
Claudio?
That's Much Ado About Nothing.
Well, I didn't know what you were
doing. Oh, okay.
All right. Malvolio.
Malvolio. Twelfth Night.
Polonius.
Hamlet.
Desdemona.
Othello.
Cordelia.
Lear.
Donalbain. Oh, careful.
It's the Scottish tragedy,
The Scottish play.
Yes, I learned.
We had such a narrow escape
last week. I have stories, too.
Well, we have. I'm just terrified that somebody... Leontes.
Leontes would be Winter's Tale.
Winter's Tale. Mercutio.
What was it again?
Mercutio.
Mercutio. That's Romeo and Juliet. Sorry.
Trestle and Barclay.
It's pronounced Berkeley.
It is pronounced Berkeley. Trestle and Barclay.
You have stumped me, sir.
Richard III.
Oh, well.
Now, okay. I'm granted they were minor characters. In fact, they just walked on. But I'm afraid you're...
You know what?
You didn't get a single one right.
No, yes. No, I'm just hoping your dean is not listening to this, because you.
Well,
but now the rules were you had to get them all right.
Oh.
To be given this book.
Okay.
And
I think the rules were made to be broken, and the man is clearly the Rain Man of Shakespeare knowledge.
Do you think I
clearly doesn't get out much.
My point is once we go down that path of not following the rules, it's a slippery slope.
Yeah. Well, you know, slippery slopes are meant to be slipped upon.
And then we end up in Congress.
Okay. Yes.
Oh, all right.
Oh
God. This is Lynn all over. Hope you're going to enjoy that.
I'm sure you will.
Good. God knows he's not going out Saturday night.
I'm not doing anything.
Before we went on the air, Evan, you were telling me about somebody in a recent play that you've been in.
Yeah, I will not name names.
No names, but you were being upstaged right and left.
Continuously, yes.
Continuously, particularly in your big scenes. So I said, if this isn't a time for the patron saint of actors to come to our aid,
intervene.
Saint Genesius. All right, this is rather embarrassing, but anyway. Genesius.
Genesius. You might be able to write in with the correct pronunciation.
Right. Well, this will get mail going. So Genesius. I'm going to offer a prayer. We'll be bowing our heads. I'm sure even our other guests are going to bow our head. Listening to this prayer, heartfelt, and I hope it's going to be very, very helpful.
Okay.
Please, Saint Genesius, please help Evan not to lash out at another actor who repeatedly upstages him in this important scene. Instead, help Evan to learn the art of upstaging. Some other insecure include a... This is not funny.
This is absolutely serious. I'm not laughing.
I'm furious with myself because this is very serious. There's nothing worse than being upstaged. Anyway, instead help Evan to learn the art of upstaging so other insecure and clueless actors won't know what is happening. For this and other concerns, too numerous to mention, be with your humble player, Evan. Amen.
Thank you.
I bet this is going to help next time.
It's much better than the old actor's prayer I used to use. You know, dear God, help! Amen. That's it.
All right. Okay, now we come to book sharing. Since it's my show, I'm going first.
Okay.
Now, 20 years ago, I opened this theater downstairs, mm-hmm. as you know. James was in one of our last plays down there, 15 years ago. We were here for 8 years, 49 plays. And we had a play contest, didn't we? And the play that won, the play that was chosen, we produced it mm-hmm. in that black box downstairs, and seating 40 people. We then did five plays a year, three in the black box, two out in the garden, the Gilbert Garden. And so when I was arriving from California, starting this whole thing and hoping for the best, I bought this book on directing by Harold Clurman. And it has been my Bible all these years. Eli Kazan said it's the best book on directing he has ever read. It takes you from choosing a play to... Okay, the director's theater, choosing the script, reading the script work with the playwright. You know, about a third of our... Sorry.
Next time we're just going to cover everything with my Nerf.
Well, we need a black felt, a green felt cover on this table. I'm buying one for next week.
Okay.
Big old pillow.
Absolutely. I'm sorry. God, James, you're criticizing me.
Threatening to call my mom.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to. I know about a third of our work are original scripts. Gilbert. We've done about 120 plays in these 21 years. And about a third of them are original. And so you work with a playwright. And we've had such wonderful playwrights that I'm sure you're going to be the most cooperative playwright ever.
Wow.
One of the playwrights that we chose, it was a good show. We took it to a competition, and North Carolina Theater Conference top competition. And, well, I shouldn't say anymore, but she was not cooperative.
Ah.
And it was very upsetting. Then setting, casting, the director's work script, and on and on and on. This is a Bible for a seasoned director, for a new director. Okay, over there it goes. Anyway, so that's my book, Harold Clurman on Directing.
Just slamming and hitting and all right. knocking things around.
Well,
okay.
All right, that's okay. Evan, what did you bring to share?
Well, when you'd ask me about the acting and stuff, I frankly think that it's best these days, particularly when you're talking about advising the students to pick up a book, that it be something, Clurman's text is definitely this, that it's not incredibly expensive to pick it up,
yeah.
and it's quality goods. The book that I kind of cheated, I brought two. I hope that's okay.
That's all right.
Okay. Well, the one is basically addressing some of that stuff I was talking about at the very beginning. It's Backwards and Forwards, a Technical Manual for Reading Plays by David Ball. And basically, the idea is that you should be able to connect all the events in both directions that happen within a play, not only as a playwright, but also as a director, of course, but also as an actor. Designers should be able to figure all this stuff out. So that you take a look at One of the things he's pretty strident about, he follows all the way through the book, is how people have treated Hamlet over the years as somebody who doesn't do things. And if you take a look at it, he's doing all the time. Yes. If anything, he's doing too much.
Yes. Think of poor Desdemona.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I kind of like that's the history question. I'm not going to go. But just to give you a sense, you do not really know a play until you see how every word is intended by its speaker to overcome some obstacle to what the speaker wants. The issue can be of major import or trivial, but there is no other reason for a character to talk.
We always want something, mm-hmm. in real life or on stage. And what is the second one?
The second book is Twyla Tharp's The Creative Habit, Learn It and Use It for Life. And I'm particularly enamored with this particular text because it's completely counter to my usual process on my own work. I tend to be, and I try not to get students to copy this, but the feeling is that art is something that comes intuitively. It's something you feel. It's something that comes out of the spontaneity of the moment. And yeah, it does, but you do have to have the habit of being ready to be creative, and that's what this book is about. How do you prepare and be in a constant state of readiness to do creative work? So she's got a whole bunch of stuff in here, and it's not written specifically just to be used by artists. It's meant for... she specifically says it has connection to business people, it has connection to educators, it has a connection to parenting. It's a really good book for getting yourself ready to do stuff.
And the title again is?
The Creative Habit, Learn It and Use It for Life. It's Twyla Tharp's book.
All right, wonderful. Oh, well, Subtle James. Great books this week. Well, time for mail, our mailbox. I'm opening the mailbox.
Okay.
And... we're hearing once again from the Philippines.
Mm.
There are such faithful and loyal listeners over there.
Uh-huh.
Frequently, we're quite critical of me, but there it is. I'm trying to be big and see the usefulness of what they're saying. Isn't it true that a tsunami is headed their way? Well, one can hope. anyway... no, I shouldn't have said that. Anyway, no, they're great people over in the Philippines. Now, here's another letter. It's from a former volunteer named Marcella.
Hmm.
I'm trying to recall who that is. Oh, I remember, tall and blonde. I recall, and very sweet, unassuming. She loved a vacuum, as I remember. She was great volunteer backstage.
Okay.
Yeah. Now the rest of these I'm going to shred.
Oh, that bad.
Well, there it is. Oh. So we have some birthdays this week. Well-known theater people. Robert Morris turns 30. Turned of 84 this week. He was born in 1931. Laurence Olivier. Born in this week in 1907, and well, Evan, it's been now let's go to the call board.
Okay.
All right. Now we're going to be talking about. We have a very special surprise in a few minutes, that I hope it remains a surprise, or I'll just spill it right now. Anyway, we're going to have a special guest in just a few minutes. But right now, let's talk about theater in Cumberland County. What's at the university? What's coming up? Or
well, at the moment, we our spring term ended on the Mother's Day weekend. So, at the moment, we're in the planning stages for next year. Mm-hmm. In October, if all goes as I'm starting to head in the direction. We'll continue our Works in Progress series with an evening of poetry performance. Poetry either written by or discovered by students there at the campus. Uh-huh. To be followed in November by, I believe, the adaptation of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Oh, wow.
Looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. Then in the spring term in February, heading into March, Paul Wilson is putting together an evening of Horton Foote plays, or play. He's making his choice now. And
we just saw tripped about
it. Yeah, that kind of is the inspiration for that in a way, but there's something really nice and human about this stuff. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, well, I was in that, if you...
Well, you were, and really small, but that's not where you were upstaged. We're quick to say that.
No. No one there would ever upstage anyone.
Not there, absolutely. Your part was so small. I'm saying there's no such thing as a small part, whatever that expression is.
Yeah, that.
Well, Evan, though, you're being a very good sport this evening, and probably you'll never agree to be at this microphone again. Now, what's going on at the Gilbert? Well, they are about to open the book club on the 29th, uh-huh. The book club play. Mm-hmm. It's an hilarious comedy. And there was another nearby...
you want to say the dates for that show?
Well, yes, it opens on the 29th and closes on June 14th. There was another company not too far from here that wanted this play, but little old Gilbert got in there and got it.
Sneaky.
Well, and very satisfying.
No, clever.
Well, and very satisfying to this much wounded artistic director, who has so many sad, pathetic stories of victimization and et cetera. But I'm rising above. Anyway, now what is the season next year for the Gilbert? Young Frankenstein, the musical.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Wonderful Life, replacing Christmas Carol for the first time of years and years and years, which you were such a star.
Thank you.
Then the Rep Company is doing Hedda Gabler.
And Titus Andronicus. Not at the same time.
No, because you are part of the Rep.
Trying to figure out, yeah, I'm part of the
Rep. Part of the Rep.
I'm trying to figure out my
involvement. But the Rep those of you who don't know, the Rep Company is 10 outstanding men, 10 outstanding women actors and actresses, and who are guaranteed a play or two or three during the season.
And one dog. There's one dog in the Rep. I'm joking.
But they are going to, that's your contribution, James.
One outstanding dog.
To our evening. Okay, thanks. I'm calling your mother. This is getting too bad. Anyway, Hedda Gabler and Titus Andronicus. And I told him, do we have a budget for it, for blood, for fake blood? That's the budget item for that play. Then we're going to do, then we're going to do Women of Manhattan,
yes,
which I know nothing about. Then we are ending with the Vagina Monologues.
Yep.
Now, we did the Vagina Monologues 15 years ago to great success.
Evan, you're going to be in that, right?
No. Evan, James, just go back to your job. Please, God. All right. Now, Vagina Monologue ends the season. All right, Evan, thank you so much for coming. But right now, I would like to welcome our surprise guest, one of the stars of Avenue Q.
Hi there. How are you doing?
On the hill. All right, Tom Littman, welcome.
Yes, that's me. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be up here. I've actually never been to this side of town.
So. Well, this is the old side in every way. Tom, it's fabulous that you can be here because you're dark tonight, aren't you?
Yeah. We're dark on Mondays and Tuesdays, but we pick up Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, two shows Saturday, and then a Sunday matinee.
Avenue Q, Cape Fear Regional Theater.
Yeah.
We all sort of so excited about getting this because we remember when it won the
Tony. Yeah, it won the Tony. Yeah. It beat out Wicked. Everyone remembers.
What kind of recommendation is that? But I have asked Tom to simply, I have yet to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to, but like me, I don't really, other than I know there are puppets and so on, but many of our listeners don't know much about it. What can you tell us, acting as if we know nothing?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the best way to put this is that it's a story based around, the people who created it based it on very loosely. You can't technically say that they did, but it's very loosely Sesame Street. But it's Sesame Street for adults. So what it really is doing is it's teaching, it takes you through the story of our main character, Princeton, who just gets out of college. He's just trying to figure out what he wants to do with his life. And it's a Sesame Street guide on how to find your purpose in life and to, how to encounter and deal with all those things that may pop up, like relationship problems and, you know, other characters discovering who they really are. It's really just a fun comedy that, I mean, it is naughty, and I do want to be clear, because we've also been very clear. It's like, this is for adult puppets only, is what we've been saying. So, you know, leave the little ones at home. But we also think, you know, teenagers might find this pretty fun, too.
Yes,
but,
I'm sure they're going to, because I know about some of the naughtiness. I have heard about that. Now, Tom,
yes.
Had you worked with puppets before?
I mean, as a kid, I loved working with puppets just on my own time, but as a actual... I would never call myself a puppeteer first. So, but when we got down here, after the second day of rehearsal, we had puppets in our hands. So, and we also had a great puppet coach, and it's been a really tremendous learning experience, and it actually makes me want to do more work with puppets, which I wasn't expecting. Yes. But it's a tremendous amount of fun. Yeah, there are a couple of different puppets. There's the ones that a single person can manipulate with two rods. Mm-hmm. They're called rod puppets. And then there's other ones that are actually manipulated by two different people. So one person is the head and the one arm, and another person is just playing the second hand. Uh-huh. And so those two puppeteers actually have to move in sync with each other. So,
but no marionettes.
No marionettes, uh-huh. Yeah. But there are a couple other surprise puppets that are different too that pop up in and out of the show.
But we see, are you dressed in black, are you?
No, actually we're not. A lot of productions do the dress in black, but our director and our costume designer both wanted to do something a little different. So we're still very neutral. We don't distract from the puppets, uh-huh. But he actually said that, you know, he wanted to go for a charcoal hipster look. You know what the hipster look is.
But we see you.
You do see me. Yes. The puppeteer and the puppet are together.
We see you mouth moving.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. It's not a ventriloquist act. It's the actors are really there to aid the puppet and vice versa. Like, they really meld into one thing. It's actually pretty remarkable how soon you just kind of let it become its own thing. It doesn't become a distracting, who do I look at? It just becomes the character. So,
what do you do with the BA in English? What is my life going to be? 4 years of college and plenty of knowledge have earned me this useless degree. I can't pay the bills yet, 'cause I have no skills yet. The world is a big, scary place.
Now, I've worked with puppets for years in my career as a librarian, and I just loved it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just wonderful.
It was very rewarding.
And yet, willing suspension of disbelief from everybody, including children. Mostly well children, but adults too. I'm sure you're getting that all the time.
Absolutely, and I think that. Something about, especially people in my age group and, you know, who grew up watching Sesame Street, like, there's something about tackling these bigger issues in this show, but because you're using puppets, it still hits, like, that sweet spot where, you know, you can talk about things that you probably couldn't talk about if it was just human actors on stage, so the puppets allow us to to go into those little darker corners in a fun way, so it's an interesting
Well, Tom, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
And I'm looking forward to going up on the hill and seeing it very, very soon.
Can't wait to have you.
Thank you. So this is Lynn Pryor asking James to dim the lights and go to black while I urge you all to find a play to see this week. So until next Thursday, thank you for your company.
For I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round, to be back where the boys are.